Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Professor Anthony Turton, he is the professor at the Center of Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. A very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning to you. What are you going to put me on the spot about?
So every day at this time, we go back in history and we look at some of the crazy and important events in history. So it's May the 12th, and I see that in 1978, on this day, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced that they would no longer exclusively name hurricanes after women. Which, of course, begs the question, why did they name hurricanes after women exclusively in the first place?
Yeah, talk about giving me a poison chalice.
Yeah, what could go wrong? What could go wrong?
I would say it's possibly because it's tempestuous. How does that one sound?
I absolutely love it. And I'm asking our listeners as well, you can give me wrong answers as well. I'm happy to accept wrong answers.
It might be the tempestuous nature, and I think the unpredictability.
I was going to go with unpredictability, but I'm scared my wife is listening. So...
So, but you know, we love them dearly. We love them all dearly.
Exactly. Even if they wreak havoc when they are annoyed. Right. Either way, let's talk about water, because it's a very, very important topic. Certainly, in many parts of Johannesburg at the moment, we're feeling the effects, and it's not due to lack of water, but it's due to the fact that our infrastructure is a little bit problematic. But it's given us a taste of what a water shortage or a water crisis actually feels like, what it could feel like. How do we rethink how we're looking at water here in South Africa in order to prevent these types of situations?
Well, yes, in my lifetime, things have changed quite dramatically. And in fact, I'm old enough to now look back in my life and see the full cycle. Right. So when I grew up, for example, the building codes were such that every house used to have a header tank up in the rafters of the house. And that gave some degree of on-site storage. And then some clever guy came along with the idea saying, no, that the central provision from government is so reliable that we no longer need header tanks on-site.
Wow, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Therefore, we can do away with those header tanks. And nowadays, we have a pressure valve and no more header tanks. And I see people are now starting to move back towards
the local
on-site storage. Mm. So it's happened full cycle already in my lifetime.
That's incredible. So these tanks that were there for storage, was that municipal water?
Yes, so municipal water would come into a house. If you had a house built in the 1950s, 1960s, that sort of era,
right,
you would find that in the apex of the rafters, there was a water tank built in. And that tank would be fed by municipal water at whatever pressure. And the pressure then from that tank would now be uniform throughout the house. So it wasn't a particularly large tank, but it would give you a day or so of storage. So there was some degree of backup.
So would you recommend that people go back to some form of on-site storage?
Well, I think it's happening now because, if you look at the demographic trends, people nowadays are moving into residential clusters, residential estates, etc. And, these residential estates are very well positioned to provide the services that the municipality seems to be failing on. So electricity and water and refuse removal and that sort of stuff is increasingly going to be provided by your residential estate infrastructure.
Yeah. So in terms of, one of the things that we often look at, and we were speaking to an expert in Israel where they talk about the recovery of water and how much water gets either recovered or not lost in the system versus other countries. Surely that is an area that we have to focus on here in South Africa as well, is to keeping whatever water we have in the system in the system.
Yes, that's a great issue there, because that's in fact where our future lies. We've reached the limit of our current available water supply. We have run out of water. In fact, we ran out of water in 2002. That's when we reached almost 100% allocation of the available water that we have. And subsequent to 2002, climate change has reduced the rainfall slightly. So we're on a gradual downhill trend in terms of rainfall. So we've pretty much reached the limit of what we can do. So what we have to now start thinking about is how to recycle water. Because remember, water is a flux that moves in time and space. It's an infinitely renewable resource. So as long as you have enough technology and capital, you can theoretically recycle water an infinite number of times. So we are only water constrained if we continue to manage water as a single use stock that we use once and then discard as waste.
And are we making progress in this regard? I mean, it would seem unlikely if you drive through our neighborhood, the amount of burst pipes and the amount of water that you can actually physically see being lost in the system.
Yes, we're using anything from between 15 to 60% of the water in the municipal mains. Your better run metros have got to about a 15 to 20% water loss, whereas your bad municipalities have got about 60% unaccounted for water. Now, this is going to be the low-hanging fruit. Let's be optimistic and say there's going to be an infrastructure revival, an economic revival post-COVID-19. Well, in all likelihood, that's going to be driven by infrastructure. And one of the things we have to then do is lift up all of our old broken pipes and put in new pipes. And part of that rejuvenation will then be what I call a dual stream reticulation system, where you have water of different quality and different price used for different purposes. So it doesn't make sense to flush your toilet with drinking water. And it doesn't make sense to wash your car with drinking water, okay? So we're going to start seeing a situation where already you're seeing some of the big high-rise buildings that are owned by some of the big commercial property owners. They are starting to already plumb those buildings for this dual stream system that will come in the future.
Is that what we call grey water?
Well, yes. So grey water will be harvested, say for example, from a shower, a shower or a bath. And that water can then be recycled back into the toilet flushing system or used elsewhere for gardening or something of that nature. But the thing is, the building codes have to be changed, because the original building codes only allow for one source of one pipe, if you like, going into a building with clean water going in and one pipe with dirty water coming out. So the building codes are going to have to change, and you find that the Green Building Council, they're starting to work on those kind of things. And some of your more progressive real estate development companies are already working on that ahead of the regulation change.
What's interesting as well is, as I've mentioned, in our area, there's been tremendous water issues. And a friend of mine said to me, why can't many people have swimming pools, why can't you put in the event of, let's say, the water being cut off for a day or two, put a pump into your swimming pool, reverse it, and at least have water to flush your toilets and to use in the showers?
Yes, you could do that. Swimming pool water is generally not actually good quality water, believe it or not. It looks good because it's nice and clear and sterile, but it's actually very, very hard water, and it's not good for you because of the chlorine that we use.
You would hate to wash in that. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, you create a thing called a trihalomethane, a THM, and trihalomethanes are carcinogenic. So you don't want to certainly drink simple water. That's not good for you. And if you start putting it down the toilet system, then you eventually get a cumulative impact at the wastewater works. But you then have to have millions and millions of people doing it.
Right.
A measurable impact. Yeah, but in the short term, it would be okay. But the long term, you'd start having problems.
Right. I think that ultimately it does seem that the answer is to have some form of a combination of things. It's on-site storage. It's being able to reuse some of your water, and not lose as much water as we're currently losing.
Yes, I think the important thing is that people have to realize that we are moving into a situation, certainly in the Johannesburg and environs, the greater conurbation around Johannesburg. We're moving into a situation of growing water shortage, simply because of the corruption that was involved in the allocation of phase two project of the Lesotho Highlands water scheme. That has been hijacked by Nomvula Mokonyane, which was Minister of Water. And that has delayed the delivery of water into the Vaal system by about a decade.
Wow.
So the buffering capacity, what is known as buffering capacity, is going to be under extreme and growing pressure over the next decade. until such time as the Poly Holly Dam can eventually be built and brought online. At the moment, we've had good rainfall, so the system is flush and it's quite healthy. But if we do have a drought for any period of time, then
we will rapidly change
from a relatively stable situation into one of localized water shortages.
Unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. Fascinating conversation.